Welcome to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. Let's agree about this one. If you interrupt sex to answer a text, you probably have a problem. And that is the subject of today's show. How are we dealing with the avalanche of information coming at us in the digital age? About 75% of people use their phones in the bathroom. About the same percentage of people check email during their time off. And a freaky 15% have interrupted sex to answer a cell phone call. All of these statistics are quoted in an article by one of today's guest, Tanya Shevitz, who coordinates the National Day of Unplugging. Tanya concludes that nothing is sacred anymore, at least not sacred enough to be safe from digital interruption. And we don't yet know how this is changing us individually and as a society. Well, some people are reaching their limit and signing themselves up for digital detox. And it's no coincidence that this is a word used in the context of drug addiction. Another of our guests today, Ben Hanna, actually says that there are plenty of similarities between behavior in the initial phases of letting go of your phone and behavior of people who are in drug or alcohol withdrawal. So joining me to talk about this, we've got Ben Hanna, who is a fellow at the Digital Detox, and he's helping to lead programming and strategy. He's currently putting together Camp Grounded, which is a technology-free summer camp for adults in the Redwoods north of San Francisco. Welcome, Ben.
Thank you.
And we're also joined by Tanya Shevitz, who's the National Communications Manager for Reboot, which is a Jewish nonprofit that sponsors the National Day of Unplugging. That's a campaign which began in 2010. And the next National Day of Unplugging is March 7th and 8th. National 2 days of unplugging.
It's 24 hours from Friday night to Saturday night.
So welcome. Thank you for being here. Looking forward to this discussion. So I came of age before the digital revolution. I didn't have a cell phone or computer when I grew up. And so, I mean, I've mostly adapted to this kind of new digital reality. But I don't understand this idea of people who are afraid to give up their cell phones. They're afraid to be in a room with other people is what you described, Ben. So can you explain what it means for people to feel addicted to their phone or their device?
Yeah, sure. So a lot of devices and applications these days are made to prompt you to check them often. Email comes in, your phone vibrates, a notice comes up and says, hey, look at me, let's see what's going on. And people become acclimated to this feedback loop. And so when that starts happening, it actually gets your dopamine going. And this dopamine release triggers the want for more dopamine. And so you keep checking it and keep checking it.
Why does it give you this dopamine response?
So humans get a dopamine response when they accomplish a task, when they check something off of a list, when they search for something and they get a reward for finding that search. So if you're checking for email and you want something new, or you're on Facebook and you want to see that little red notification and you get it, it's a random reward, much like the hamster who pushes a button. And sometimes it gets food, sometimes it doesn't. But when it does, it's ecstatic. And that same release.
So then what happens to us when we check it and there's nothing new?
We keep checking it. We just keep checking it until something new happens.
So it becomes a compulsion.
It does. Yeah.
And how frequent do you think this is?
It depends on each person. But the more often you check it, the more often you want to check it. And so this loop kind of spirals out of control pretty often.
And so let me bring you into this as well, Tanya. So they're talking about these as legitimate kind of addictions. Is this something that clinicians are actually dealing with?
Yeah, well, scientists are finding that the brain is actually changing in response to this constant connectivity. And actually, there's an addiction center run by this Dr. Hillary Cash in Redmond, Washington. That's a digital detox addiction place. And people go there to recover from their digital addiction. And this could be, email, computers, or video games. In many cases, it's video games. And you're seeing those all over Asia as well. There are a lot of the addiction centers in Asia because video games are so big there. So it absolutely is this thing that's being responded to by clinicians, by scientists who are looking at how the brain is changing.
And so there's this addiction, and then there's just the reality of life right now. And so in my case, I've made this choice that I'm going to be available to my students and my staff at all times, because that gives me the freedom to pick up my daughter from school and to be doing other things. So there is this big trade-off. So how are you thinking about that kind of a balance?
Well, if I could just respond quickly to that. Well, I mean, I feel like this expectation that you will respond to, like you're saying, you're always available. So you're always going to respond to every ping, every buzzing, every ringing of your email and your texting and your Facebook that pings you has created this society of people who are on edge and overwhelmed. And I would argue that if you set some sort of boundaries, so you say, I'll be available 24 hours or whatever, you know, 18 hours, but I may not respond to you within 5 minutes, then they know that you're there and they'll get a response from you, but it's not going to be immediate. So maybe you set aside, you know, a half hour where you're picking up your daughter and you're actually talking, you pick her up from school and you're speaking with her about her day instead of saying, hold on, honey, I got to check my email. And I'm, you know, I fall victim to this as well. I'm like, oh my gosh, my boss may have sent me this email in response to an email that I just sent her. But I think it's really important to set goals for yourself. In fact, in the middle of, Ben and I, the Digital Detox and Reboot, held a device-free drinks party for the National Day of Unplugging, where 700 people came out and unplugged, and it was amazing, and we should talk about that more. But in the middle of the planning for this, the week leading up to it, I think 2 or 3 days before, the venue that we had chosen closed down. Like, it was shut down by the fire department. And so this was a pretty big crisis. We had, you know, this huge thing, all this press about it. And so I was helping Levi deal with that. And while that was going on, I picked my son up from school and I went to the playground. Levi and I had just had a phone call about like finding a new venue. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to take an hour. And he and I, my son and I, my 4-year-old and I played at the playground. We pretended to be pirates and we just had a great time. And I knew this was going on, but I also knew that that hour that I took with my son, nothing was going to, there was no major horrible thing that was going to happen just because I wasn't plugged in. So I think that people can set aside, even in the middle of frantic times, you can set aside some time.
So that you are just without that device and focused on your son. And you write in one of your columns or your blogs, you wrote that my son would walk around the house saying, where's my iPhone? I have a call in a minute. And you said, I know where this behavior was coming from.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, I fall victim to this as well. And in my defense, I do work at home. So my son, he was home with a nanny, so he would see me working but during work hours. But I do, you know, I mean, I struggle with it as well, but I really do try to set aside times when every day when I'm unplugged with my kids. And my kids are absolutely addicted. I don't know if you want to talk about an hour later. I was just on vacation for a week and completely unplugged. And I saw a major difference in my kids during that time, especially my 10-year-old.
I do want to talk about this more, but let me just invite our listeners to join our conversation. The number is 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. If you're somebody who's grappling with the question of how to sort through piles of information coming at you, we want to hear if you've found a good solution to this digital overload, and how do you use your devices, and when do you decide to turn them off? 866-798-TALK. Talk. That's 866-798-8255. You can also send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Tanya Shevitz is National Communications Manager for Reboot, which sponsors the National Day of Unplugging. And Ben Hanna is Camp Coordinator for Camp Grounded. And that is a program of digital detox. Again, our number to join the conversation is 866-798-TALK. And it's a toll-free number. So, Ben, you wanted to get in on this question of kind of how this is affecting kids, and especially those who are growing up in this digital age who have never known anything but.
Totally. And so one of the things that's really interesting these days and age is you see 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds who are starting to use iPads and iPhones. And I've seen a child try to use a magazine and touch the magazine and try to scroll and say, is this broken? What's going on? You know, the whole fundamental shift is happening here. And we see some of the same things at our events where people use a typewriter and it's the first time they've ever even seen a typewriter in their life. And they're so enthralled to be typing at the keys and having that tactile feedback. One of the things that people don't really realize about an always on connected phone or device in their pockets is that it's like adding pebbles slowly to a backpack. Your stress levels slowly grow up, and these are equivalent to an always stressed panic situation over time. They found increased levels of epinephrine in people who always are online, people who are using this over time. They have studies where novices come in, and they have them use the computer for 5 hours a week for 2 weeks afterwards, and their epinephrine levels have risen. And it's a really kind of crazy stress reaction.
And the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that kids not see a digital device, a screen, TV, anything, until they're at least 2 years old. That seems less and less likely in this new age. What recommendations do you have for parents?
Play with your kids. You know, seriously, sit down, play with them, interact, vocalize, communicate. Let them know that they're your priority, not the phone that's always going off in your pocket. If you're talking to your children and your phone goes off and you pick it up and answer it, that teaches the child that that phone is more important than they are at that given moment. And it may not be like quite an obvious thing, but over time it builds.
There's the book Together Alone, and in there I heard the author on Fresh Air, and she said that in her study she found that kids do consider themselves second to their parents' digital devices, and that just really hurt me, like, you know, and makes me more aware of my use with my kids.
And I feel like it's just escalated so much in the past couple of years. What used to be a real convenience, like I said, this ability to be with my kid all the time, has turned into I can't manage it. And if I don't send an email back immediately, that it'll just get buried in the hundreds of emails that are there. So what advice do you have for somebody like me?
Right. I think, what's important here is that we aren't preaching at people. We want to give them tools.
Preach to me.
Yeah. But we want, you know, we're not saying to people like, we're holier than thou, because we're not. We both struggle with this. I mean, I think everyone struggles with it.
It's all about balance at this
point. Exactly.
So if you can check your email in the morning, you can check it at lunch, you can check it in the evening. Do that. While you're eating food, don't have your phone out. Don't check your devices. While you're having conversations with other people, don't be talking on the phone or texting under the table at the same time. try to be in one place at one time, you know? Be mindful of that connection you're having with other people.
Oh, I remember being really shocked. This is a couple of years ago when somebody like brought out their iPhone at the dinner table, and I was really pissed. And now it seems like that's kind of an acceptable norm now, acceptable
totally.
Behavior.
Totally. And if you're on public transit and you look around, people are just staring at their phones.
Yes.
So there's a couple of games you can play while you're like eating meals with people. And one of them is you put all your phones in a pile on the table, and the first person who has to check their phone before the check comes pays for the check.
A cell phone stack,
you know? And that way there's a lot of motive to not look at your phone.
And so does this quandary that we're talking about here reflect kind of the digital divide, that there's people who are suffering from digital overload and then other people for whom this isn't a problem, or is it becoming increasingly an issue for everybody?
You know, so there's different demographics that definitely use technology in different ways. Here in the Bay Area, there's a lot of tech companies that have a lot of people who feel like they need to have this always-on connection.
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly upper middle class white collar workers who fall into this subset, but the digital addiction really goes across all spectrums. Americans are watching more television now than they ever have before, and including second screen devices. So they'll have the TV going, they'll be looking at their Android or iPhone at the same time, talking to people about what's going on,
and reading a book.
No, they won't be.
They
won't be reading a book anymore.
This morning,
This
morning, my son had the television on, and we have an agreement when he finishes his tasks in the morning, he can watch TV until we have to leave. It's usually about 20 minutes or something. And he was playing on his Kindle, which we bought for him to read on, but he was playing on his Kindle and had the TV on. And so I made him shut the TV off. I was like, why would you have both on? It just doesn't make any sense. And it speaks to this thing that kids today are growing up with this constant distraction. And researchers are finding that that is changing the way their brains function and is changing how they respond to things, and because they're constantly distracted and constantly multitasking.
And so tell us how this device-free drinks party works.
So we set a venue, people come, and we have a phone check, much like a coat check. But we actually take people's phones, and we put them in slots and give them a phone check tag, and they can bring it back when they leave to get their phone. And so when people are actually in the event, they don't have their equipment with them anymore. We have board games set up. We have live acoustical music going. We have somebody drawing portraits for people. We have typewriters set up.
What did you call this? Analog activities?
Yeah, they're analog activities. And they force you to make a face-to-face connection with people and have a conversation. And conversation stems from the words to move together, which really means that you have to take the other person's opinion or point of view while you're talking with them in order to connect, which you can't really do if you're doing it digitally. You're putting all of the best parts of your life out and waiting for feedback validating all of that for you. You don't have to embrace the negative sides of things, which really help you grow and learn.
And you're going to have another device-free drinks party in June?
Yeah, there'll be one at the end of June.
And we'll put a link to all of this information at yourcallradio.org. We're speaking about our kind of hyper-connected world and what the pros and cons of that are and how we can kind of try to balance that out and find some way to use what's good about all of this new information coming at us and the ability to be connected while still being a human being and having real conversations. I'm joined by Tanya Shevitz, who's National Communications Manager for Reboot, a Jewish nonprofit which sponsors the National Day of Unplugging, and Ben Hanna, who's Camp Coordinator for Camp Grounded, which we'll hear about in just a minute. And that's a program of digital detox. We have full lines, so I want to start getting to calls now. Let's go to Kristen in San Francisco. Hi, Kristen.
Hello. I just wanted to say, in being frugal during this little recession thing, I just no longer could afford to pay the monthly iPhone fee. So I started using it at home under my Wi-Fi at night. And just checking emails at night, I felt like was really liberating because I wasn't doing it 15 times a day anymore, you know. And I started using a flip phone. And so I don't text as much. And it just really freed me up.
the flip phone.
I no longer, and my fee is like way down, and people can reach me once a day. It's fine. I remember the times that we would, you know, coordinate dates.
Kristen, did you find you were able to really focus on the messages you were responding to and really prioritize them and give them the attention they deserved?
Yes, I did. And I would, you know, sometimes go to my laptop and like really write a comprehensive email, not just like on this little device and send three lines, you know, a few words, but.
That's terrific.
Yeah, and thank you so much. And also really quickly, too, I no longer could bring my iPhone with me for my runs on the beach. So I was, like, forced to just, like, listen to the waves, which is really good for the brain. And it should be more natural, you know?
That's something that people are really missing out on. And the New York Times had a great story a couple of years ago about how kids today aren't learning language as quickly because their parents aren't talking to them, because as they're walking down the street, they aren't saying to them, look, there's a tree. Look at that bird. Look at, you know, noticing things around them. And I think kids are being trained not to notice things. And so that's great that you have gotten back to that.
Well, thanks for the call, Kristen. Let's go to Aaron in San Francisco, who has something related to what you just said, Tanya. Hi, Aaron.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call. So I guess my thoughts listening to this have, you know, based on my own experience, I'm a 40-year-old, you know, married guy with 1 5-year-old kid, and I've got a, you know, I work full-time, but I've made a very kind of conscious decision early on in my career, and I work in nonprofits, and a lot of why I did that was because I envisioned, you know, down the road, maybe this would be a way to, you know, have like a professional career and do some things that I consider interesting, but not really be in a culture that demands constant access to me. And that's worked out fairly well. You know, like you leave at the end of the day and nobody really expects to hear or see, you know, hear from you or see you again until the next morning. And that's very nice. But one thing I've really, so that's maybe a luxury I enjoy that some working parents don't. But one thing I've really started to notice in the last couple years is when I am, particularly with my, you know, with my son or just with my family, you know, I've just kind of asked myself, like, how important is anything else that could be going on related to me right now? How important could it possibly be? Like, here's my wife, here's my son, we're at the park or we're hanging around the house. So like really anything else that like that somebody needs to tell me right now couldn't be that bad or that important because like these guys are here. So like what am I possibly like what do I really need to know from the outside world? So just like put
yeah.
the stuff away.
And one of the good things about technology too right now is that, you know, yes, it is an always on connection, but at the same time it holds and saves all that information for later. You can always come back and look at it when you need to get to it or when you've set aside time to do that.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. You just went, Tanya, to Costa Rica for a week. You were totally unplugged. Tell us about that experience, and then I have a question about it.
Before we went, I said to my husband, you know, I think that we really should try being unplugged the entire time. And he was like, oh my gosh, well, what if I get an email, you know? And I said, you know, you're on spring break. He's a teacher. No one's going to email you with anything emergency. My work will know that I'm gone. It's totally, we'll be fine. It's, you know, so, and it was amazing. Like we, and I really thought it was important for my 10-year-old, who, as I said, is completely addicted to video games, even though I control them pretty tightly. And it was amazing because I was telling Ben earlier, like, I even noticed that I wasn't saying to my 4-year-old, hang on just a second, which I do when I'm on my email or I'm responding to a text or something like that. And we were really so focused on each other. And the kids, I mean, I really saw a big difference in their demeanor. My 10-year-old, he was nicer. He didn't talk back. And we did not fight. Like, at home, we fight all the time about digital devices.
What are the fights over? Get off?
Right. No, you can't have time right now. He always wants time constantly. And it just makes him, I see the aggression coming out in him. And so it was so nice to not have that. And I saw, you know, there were a ton of people who were not unplugged, and we were sitting and having breakfast or dinner, and we were talking. And, you know, all around us, people even who also were on vacation were on their devices. And it was just, I felt that the kids had more imagination. And just the family time was incredible.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And so that's what you're talking about when you talk about this digital detox, to really just unplug for a specific amount of time. So, but my question about that is, I did this recently, went to Mexico City for a couple of days and left my device at home. And the problem with that is that coming back is just so overwhelming that it's not worth it.
Well, I would argue that it's worth it. I mean, I too came back and had, you know, hundreds of emails or thousands of emails even. And at one point, just even coming back from the airport, my husband was driving and I was both texting and emailing my boss at the same time and dealing with things, you know, but nothing that I was dealing with was, you know, just a complete emergency. Yes.
Yeah.
And we offer some strategies to help people prepare for this, because when you do decide that you're going to kind of go offline for a little while, there's some things you can do to help mitigate that after the fact. Some of those is tell people beforehand, you know, post on Facebook and Twitter and everything, I'm on a digital detox, I'm out of touch. Don't try to contact me here.
Uh-huh.
Put your away message. Say what you're doing. And then ahead of time, tell your like the people you work with that, hey, I'm going to be gone. Here's the deal. Please cover all this stuff. And it does take some preparation nowadays to really kind of move out of this thing. There's some phases people go through, too, when they're going through this detox process. And we can
tell
talk about
us about the, tell us about the phases. We have about 2 minutes before the break.
Sure. So when people first give up their phones, and we see this repeatedly at the device-free drinks, when people first give up their phones, they're really nervous.
What's going to happen to
me? Yeah, exactly. And they give it away, and they're apprehensive. They kind of walk around lost looking for a little while. But then, you know, on our retreats.
And you're talking about this is just giving up your phone for this drinks
for a few hours.
Device party?
Right.
Well, there's another side on our retreats as well when they know they're giving it up for 5 days. And so they give it up for the first day. They're kind of always thinking about what they're not having going on, what they're not aware of. They forget about it for the second day. The third day, they still forget about it. For the fourth day, they're starting, you know, the Sunday night feeling. They're looking ahead. And now they're really worried that they've missed something big. But they come to rationalize and like realize that, okay, it's not that big a deal. Nothing that big could have happened. And that's when they really find peace with the fact that they have totally disconnected from everything. So it is a couple day process.
And this is Camp Grounded?
This is our digital detox retreat.
This is your digital detox retreat. So when I first read about that, I just laughed out loud thinking this is absurd, right? That people would have to go on a retreat like this. But who's going on these retreats?
It's people generally, like the age range is from 20 to 65 right now. It's more concentrated in the late 20s to early 30s, but it's the full spectrum of people. A lot of people are a little burned out from working on a computer so often all day, every day. Some people just have realized that their phones are calling them all the time. And when they put it down, they don't necessarily that feeling, right? There's like a word. People are becoming scared of not having their phones anymore. And when people realize that, they take a step back and they say, all right, maybe I need to do something about this.
Right. And it seems like we're becoming more conscious. Like you said, this was like the pebbles into this bucket, or a frog in slowly boiling water, that, you know, we hadn't really been so aware of how overwhelming this all is.
They're just now finding the first results. Like, there's a couple who neglected their baby and the baby died because they were actually feeding an online baby and taking care of it, much like a Tamagotchi.
No.
Yeah. And in South Korea now, there's people, they have to like shut off internet. There's internet curfews because people are just spending all of their time not eating, using the internet for so long, playing games at night.
You're listening to Your Call. You just heard from Ben Hanna, who's camp coordinator for Camp Grounded, which is a program of digital detox. And we're also speaking with Tanya Shevitz, who's national communications manager for Reboot, which sponsors the National Day of Unplugging. And you can join our conversation at 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. Or you can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and we'll be right back after this short break.
You're listening to Your Call here on Local Public Radio. You can join the conversation today. The number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK. Or you can send an email, question, or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You know, whatever kind of mobile device you have, it's easy to listen to KALW's live streams. You can download the public radio player from iTunes or use TuneIn Radio app from just about any mobile platform. All the details are at KALW.org. Just click the Listen Live link at the top of the page. but not while you're multitasking. Programming here on Local Public Radio is supported in part by An Evening with David Sedaris, Sunday, May 5th at the War Memorial Opera House here in San Francisco. Ticket information at davidsedarisontour.com.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org and find out what's coming up next. Tomorrow, if you want to make a just and sustainable economy, where do you start? We'll talk with the author of What Then Must We Do? Straight Talk About the Next American Revolution. The author says the usual prescriptions for making change, like political mobilization and labor organizing, are not working, so we should shift our focus to democratizing the ownership of wealth from the bottom up. So how do you do that? Find out tomorrow. Friday, of course, is our weekly media roundtable, and we'll be speaking with journalists about coverage of the week's news, and we'll be focusing on the Boston bombing. And today, are you in need of a digital detox? We're talking about digital overload. Some people are getting so many emails a day that they sign up for camps where they have to leave their devices behind for days. So where do we draw the line between the convenient benefits of hyperconnectivity and the counterproductive side effects? 866-798-TALK is the number to join our conversation. It's 866-798-8255. And we want to hear about how you're balancing the benefits and problems associated with hyperconnectivity. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And you can leave comments at our website, which is yourcallradio.org. And we'll have information about all of our guests there. And we're joined by Ben Hanna, who's camp coordinator for Camp Grounded, which is a program of digital detox, and Tanya Shevitz, who's national communications manager for Reboot, which is a Jewish nonprofit that sponsors the National Day of Unplugging, which, by the way, is March 7th to 8th, 2014, coming up. So we've got a lot of callers and emails. I'll read the emails in just a minute. Let me go to Amon in Oakland. Hi. Welcome to Your Call.
Hi. Thank you for having me, and very interesting subject. I have a question about, the technology companies themselves have a really strong incentive model to maximize the face time of the users. And I was wondering if you have any ideas about, how that incentive model might change. And, do we need to reach some tipping point of, of overuse in order for...
Before I was doing this, I actually worked as a product designer for a tech company. And part of what I did is I, did psychological analysis on how people use the apps. And part of my job was to figure out how do we make them use them more. So we'd do research and we'd say, okay, this is letting them do this. If we do this, they're checking it this often, this many times per day. What can we do to get them to do it more? And it's because this is how the current market works for these. And the more people use it, the more money you're able to raise and the more you're able to do. And the better your stats are. And so I started to realize, I'm spending 10 to 12 hours a day manipulating how other people use their computers on my computer. And it just was not a renewable cycle. You can't keep going like that. As people start to realize this, I think the shift is going to be to quality over quantity. So if you can consume a smaller amount of information and get more out of it without having to check 15 or 20 times a day, that's going to be part of how this is reflected.
15 or 20 seems so reasonable to me.
But that's also what, all these researchers are finding, that you're much more productive if you aren't checking all the time or multitasking all the time. It's really makes a big difference. So that's exactly where it's going. And I do feel like we've reached a tipping point. And one of the issues that Ben brought up earlier is like the expectation that people are plugged in all the time. So he has these people coming to these detox where they have to let everyone know that they'll be gone. And there is a movement in some companies and some organizations where they're saying they're shutting down email. In Germany, there's a car company that shuts down email at the end of the day so that people cannot get on it. And at the Contemporary Jewish Museum, for example, there's a manager there who I work with who has told her employees, don't get on email at night on my behalf. Like, I'm not going to be on email. I don't expect you to be on email. So I think it's really has to be a shift in society. Yeah. On the expectations. And once people realize they don't have to respond immediately to every email, then they'll take their own time and realize that they can take a break.
And let's go to some of our emails. Chuck says, it doesn't have to be this way. We have dumb phones in my family. Our other devices, for example, tablets, iPods, Roku, Netflix, etc. need Wi-Fi, so I have my router configured to turn them off between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m.
Oh,
problem
amazing.
Solved, says Chuck. Kevin says, I lost my BlackBerry phone last weekend, and I was manic. My kid thought I was mad at him. I'd been thinking of letting go of either my landline or my cell phone to cut costs. Now I can't imagine not having my device. Thinking of going to my provider's store this morning, I have a family member addicted to online games. I've researched Olganon? Somebody's phone is ringing as we speak. Online Gamers Anonymous, just like AA, but their meetings are online. Thanks for the show. Love the smiles on people's voices today as well, even though it's a serious subject. Let's go to some more calls. Let's go to Molly in Monterey. Hi, Molly.
Hi. Thank you so much for this show. It has raised a lot of concern for me. I have just a landline. I only have an emergency cell phone, but that's just because I'm fortunate to work in that kind of a way that I don't need it. But my concerns are the massive plastic waste stream that we're creating with these things and the dropping, for example, dopamine. The dopamine levels in children drops when they stare at a screen. So, and one of the things I thought of the other day was, I think it was the film Fahrenheit 451, where your status symbol was how many walls could you afford to cover with screens of government-sanctioned reality TV in your living room. And now we've just replaced those with mobile screens that have nothing to do with where we are in the moment. And another interesting thing people might want to take a look at is a film called Brainstorm, which was Natalie Wood's last film. It gives a pretty good sense of what can happen with the human brain being manipulated in this kind of mechanistic way.
Thank you so much, Molly. Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, and when you were saying that, you know, the dopamine levels are reported to be increased, 1 out of 10 Americans report depression right now, and heavy internet users are 2.5 times more likely to be depressed than moderate internet users. And, you know, you can't say causation or correlation here, but it maybe depressed people are more attracted to the internet because of the social outlet that it can become. And so there is a correlation there between people who have thriving social lives and people who use the internet to an unhealthy level. And that's not to say that the internet is bad in general.
Right. No, I mean, there's so many pros to all of this ability to connect, to get information. And for people who are maybe homebound, for example, I mean, the benefits are enormous. But so what's some of your advice for people?
Moderate the time. Just be conscious of it. So if you're going to be online, don't find yourself switching tabs, searching, you know, for often, like, all the way around. People switch tabs like 40 or 50 times an hour. They're starting to do this. You know, they'll switch applications all the time. When people they track internet use and they track people's computer uses, they find that they're switching tasks on average every 2 minutes. This is no way to go about accomplishing anything. And you get this kind of feeling of frustration and panic that builds up at the end of that until you stop and back away and you're like, okay, I can breathe again.
So I feel like you're totally describing me today.
I think it's really about balance. That's what I mean. Neither of our organizations are anti-technology in any way. It's really about balance and having people be more aware of their use and just taking steps, even small steps, like you said, checking email only at that woman who called and said she checks email only at night. I mean, that's a great step.
But some people, that's just not realistic. I mean, I'm in the news business.
Right,
I can't
you have
do that.
To. But I mean, so you set steps that are goals that are achievable for you. Like I said, the half hour when you pick your daughter up or, you know, while you're having dinner, you put away your cell phone and absolutely don't answer it. You either shut it off or just put it in another room and you don't answer it. Because the likelihood that, you know, it's an emergency is very low. I mean, imagine when we used to go to restaurants without our phones and the babysitter had to call the hostess if they needed you. I mean, I have a 10-year-old and a 4-year-old and there has never been an emergency from the babysitter. I've had the babysitter call me before to say that my son Cash wants to know if he can use watch TV. And I'm like, that is not an emergency. You did not have to call me for that. So, I mean, that's an example where it's just overuse. People think that you can just do it all the time. I think one tip that Levi brought up at
we don't know who
partner.
Levi is. You keep mentioning this Levi.
Levi is my partner at Digital Detox.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
So, Ed, when we were speaking once before and giving tips to people, he said that one of the most important things would be to get yourself an alarm clock. So that, you know, so many people have their phones as their alarm clock. So the first thing you do is pick up your phone and then you check your email or you text people.
Yeah.
So instead, get yourself an alarm clock. When the alarm clock goes off, lay there for a minute in bed, lie in bed and think, or just let your brain be silent, you know, instead of immediately going 100%.
And so those are the things that we're losing, are those moments of contemplation and also conversation, yeah, right, with real human beings.
One of the things we do at the retreats is we actually put people in a situation where they have to be with themselves for a little while. So we'll have a meal.
It's uncomfortable for people these
it
days.
Is.
They don't know how to do it.
So we'll have a meal, and after the meal, we have no scheduled time. Like, there is nothing you can do. We tell you, don't read, don't write in your journal, just go and be by yourself for an hour. And people are very uncomfortable with this situation. After just a few minutes, they start to fidget. You can tell they want to pull out a phone and start checking on what everybody else in the world is doing.
And maybe our kids have never experienced this.
Exactly. And so it takes people about 20 minutes to get out of this kind of zone before they settle back. They sit down, they relax, they start observing the view around them. They really get into it. And by the time we call them back, they're very peaceful.
And that's Ben Hanna. He's camp coordinator for Camp Grounded, which is a program of digital detox. We're also joined by Tanya Shevitz, who's national communications manager for Reboot, and they sponsor the National Day of Unplugging. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and we're talking about the pros and cons of our hyper-connected world. And you can join us at 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number. Are you somebody who needs a digital detox like I do? And if you have a great answer about how to unplug, let us know. 866-798-8255. You can also send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. And yourcallradio.org is where we'll have all of the information that you're hearing on today's show. How do we make it socially and particularly professionally acceptable to unplug? I think that that's a really important question that hopefully you're talking about with business owners, for example, and people who are managing workplaces, because that, to me, is really one of the big issues here. 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. You were going to answer my question there, Ben.
To address that, you kind of have to zoom out a little bit and take a bigger look at the whole, like, society as a whole right now. So humans always move towards being more connected. Small tribes banded together become bigger tribes. They migrate out to form countries and nation states. And so people always go to the most connected state that they can be in. It's just, we're social animals. What we're seeing now, though, is that, you know, as you're able to work from home, you're able to work from everywhere, the employer relationship kind of becomes bent to where they become almost more part of your family because you can always talk to them. And so one of the big important things is to really set limits on that. Say, look, here's the amount of time I've dedicated to my work right now. And not everybody can do that because, you know, decision makers in a lot of organizations always report, like, checking 66% check email on vacation. And you just really need to set some limits and expectations about when you are and when you are not available.
Well, and maybe these just aren't conversations that we've had enough because, like you say, this is just kind of an avalanche that's built up, and then suddenly we feel like it's fallen upon us, right?
But I do think that it's a conversation that's going to start happening more often because people are reaching this tipping point, this point where they just can't function anymore. They're not functioning as highly because they're multitasking all the time. And so I think that as that's happening, you're going to see this conversation, and there are those companies that are starting to move toward that. And we actually had, Sergey Brin and Ann Wojcicki, his wife Ann Wojcicki, Ann is part of our organization, is on the board. And a few years ago, they had us throw an unplugging party for them and some of their friends. And at that party, Sergey even argued with me that I shouldn't be wearing my watch because it takes me out of the moment. You know, you're thinking, what's next? And so he even embraced it, and he unplugged for 24 hours. And, well, he, of course, has a team of people who can handle things. Someone, you know, had said to us, oh, well, I can't unplug. And I was like, Sergey Brin, unplug. I think
you can do it. Yeah.
You know?
So we have an email saying, could somebody address the texting while driving issue? There have been recent stories about train operators and helicopter pilots having fatal crashes due to texting, but I rarely see the no texting law enforced. Every single day I see texting in cars on my commute. I've never seen anybody pulled over. And actually, there's an article in today from Bloomberg News. Government asks car makers to counter distracted driving. The Department of Transportation asked automakers to bar the use of social media sites and internet browsing when a vehicle is moving. Yeah, Ben.
Yeah, so right now the average response time on an email is a little bit over an hour, and the average response time on a text is just under 4 minutes. The feeling that you must immediately respond to a text is there because it pings in your pocket, it vibrates, and you look at it. If you don't do anything, most people forget to address the text message. Texting while driving driving is more important than responding to this message. They've actually, some studies have done that, like, voice texting is not much safer than texting in general because you're not paying attention to what's going on. You are paying attention to the person you're trying to talk to and communicate. Now, these texting and driving laws, they're tough to enforce unless a cop sees you doing that. They can't really do anything about it. But the statistics show that texting and driving is more dangerous than driving drunk. And you really, it just really needs to be a matter of choice for the person who's using their phone.
Any other advice?
I would say the same thing, like that, you know, it's the expectation that will respond. And so what you have to, for yourself, you have to set the expectation in the, with your friends or whoever, that you won't respond immediately. And again, so it's almost training yourself and training other people to understand that you will have balance and that you will not respond immediately. It's society has built up this like immediacy, and it's our own, like we said, this addiction to immediacy.
And do you have some tools, kind of like a new etiquette, or is there some draft of kind of how we should, you know, rethink our society now that we have gotten to this kind of boiling tipping point?
So, you know, one of the things we do is when we're responding to emails, we have at the bottom, you know, thanks for getting in touch with us. We're probably out in the woods. It may be a few days before we get back to you. And that's kind of an overall disclaimer saying, you know, we're going to get back to you. It is important, but not right away because we're doing other things with our lives. Mm-hmm. Putting something simple like that at the bottom of your email reply or in your signature saying, I'll get back to you, but I'm moderating my internet use. Or, you know, I'll get back to you, but I am spending time with my family tonight. Really lets people know where their priorities are. And if you see that, you go, oh, okay, I'm not expecting
it. If we start seeing that more and more often, maybe we will feel like, okay, it is acceptable for me to put some limits on this.
Society's expectations take a long time to shift, right? These came about without anybody really realizing they were happening. When Obama was running for office the first time, the iPhone was not the main phone. The smartphones weren't out there, and now they're everywhere. You can get a free Android smartphone right now, and so it's really, the whole market is getting saturated. Now it's time to start shifting these expectations back to, I don't have to respond to you immediately because I have my life that I really need to deal with.
Right. Refocusing on what's important. I mean, that's what we're really encouraging people to do. While we say, you know, the National Day of Unplugging is 24 hours, we're really hoping that people will make this a regular practice. And whether that is just a half hour each day where they focus on their children, or 3 hours at night, or, you know, during a hike or whatever, just set reasonable expectations. And if you feel like you're going to twitch when your phone is, you don't have your phone on you, you know, pick up a hobby. And so then for, you know, take a pottery class, and on Saturdays, that's your hour of unplugging or whatever. Just, you've really have to do something to set reachable goals for yourself and take small baby steps. And then eventually you'll enjoy it and build it up.
I want to get some more of our callers in, and then we can hear about more of your retreats. Kay in San Francisco, welcome to your call.
Thank you so much for this program. I was a cocaine addict, and I think this is worse. When I'm on the BART and the bus, there is not one human being, except for elderly people maybe, that don't have their face in a phone. We live in San Francisco. Anybody that's ever been in an earthquake or anybody that's ever had anything real happen to them knows that paying attention is really important. I belong to a Buddhist center in the Mission District, and we have a lot of software engineers and people that are heavily involved in the tech industry. And we do a lot of mindfulness training, a lot of meditation. Meditation is so difficult for people that are going 20 million miles an hour, but yeah. It is the absolute best thing. And you've said many times, well, we're going to not text or not use the phone for, you know, 24 hours. That's like asking a crack addict, oh, just be conscious of your crack use. You know? Just no. Don't do it for 24 hours. This is a serious thing.
It's also more pervasive than...
I'm blown away.
It's like socially acceptable drug use.
Right. It's the new crack. It's iPhone is the new crack.
I only check my text messages when I'm out with my friends. You know, like, it's, you know?
Right. So. But that's the thing. It's like, well, drug use, you know, is limited to a certain segment. This is like, this has become pervasive with everyone. I mean, from 2-year-olds up to 90-year-olds, where they're just literally addicted to it.
But I really like your analogy of the frog in the slowly boiling water, because that's what it feels like has happened.
So for that analogy is for people who don't know. If you this is morbid, but if you place a frog in a pot of water and slowly turn the water up until it's boiling, the frog will not jump out. It will just boil and die. And this is what's happening to a lot of people, is they aren't realizing that the temperature is turning up because they're acclimating it to it in stages very slowly over time, until their stress levels are so high that when they try to stop cold turkey, they really have panic attacks. Their stress levels peak. Their dopamine drops. It's a bad situation.
Well, we have lots of calls, so let me go to some more. Shan in San Francisco, welcome to your call, and thank you to Kate for calling.
That was a great call. As an elder who's entered elderhood, I resisted a lot of this digital stuff. Doesn't mean one day I'll probably be forced to do it. But what I'm picking up is even in the projection of voice, I'm fascinated by your two guests, but they are talking so rapidly. And I am wondering, really wondering, if indeed this speed, you know, when you're in conversation, say, I don't tweet, I don't Twitter. Shall I repeat? I don't tweet, I don't Twitter either. But the point is, there is so little dialogue. It's all monologue. Come on, folks. You know, I appreciate you all, but when Channel 4 went digital and you had to get a box, I refused. I mean, I don't go for it.
All right. Well, thank you for calling, Shan. So what about that we're, you know, it's even speeding up our talking.
Right now I blame caffeine. But
in my defense, I've always talked quickly, even before I had a cell phone.
That's true. They're saying that, you know, right now people consume about 34 gigabytes of information online, over 100,000 words, 100,000 paragraphs. And this is more than you can remember. The average person can only really remember about 10% of this amount of information. And part of what we're trying to promote here is that when you take a break from this, we're not saying just don't do anything else, but fill it with meaningful activities. Right. Research has shown us you go through a walk through the woods or through an arboretum, that, you know, your memory improves by about 20% for the time period after that.
All right. So let me try and get to one more call at least. Judith in Watsonville, welcome to your call.
Hi. Yeah, I was calling. I don't have one of those fancy phones, but I do something called fall down the cyber rat hole when I'm on the internet. what I was calling about is one of the things I do, I found out about airplane mode on the phone so that I can actually turn off the phone to avoid the radiation from the phone partly, but also to avoid any unexpected interruptions, and I can still use some of the functions like the calendar reminders to get the reminders that I need to have.
Well, that's a great solution. Yeah. Thank you so much for that, Judith. And you know, we just have a few minutes left in the show, so we have an email from San Francisco. How do you suggest, without preaching, your friends and family turn off the TV and put away their smartphones? Some people think I'm preachy, so I need help. All right, so let's help and kind of some of these ideas for how to unplug and how to create some more balance.
Well, maybe instead of saying to someone, hey, you know, you need to shut off your phone, you're on your phone too much, or we're having dinner and you're on your phone, say to them in one of those, it's, you know, they always talk about this, like, I would love it if we were able to sit down and have a glass of wine and have a conversation, or I would love to play a board game with you, you know, to your kids, maybe say that instead, you know, really set out things, alternative things.
And start small, you know, so
right.
Turn it into a little bit of a game with your friends. If you're going out to eat a meal, tell them, you know, I really like talking to people while I'm eating with them. Let's have a bet going where you can't pull out your cell phone at dinner unless there's money on the table and you're trying to research a fact.
So is this a generational thing? Because this doesn't happen with my friends and I when we go out to dinner.
I think it is a generational thing because as you've grown up more acclimated to technology and this always-on thing, you need it more. You crave this feeling more. I find it happening with myself all the time. If I've gone a little while without checking what's happened in the world, I feel this need to know what's going on, and it's something I'm working on personally.
I mean, it is absolutely. I mean, I see it so I have this whole group of 10-year-old boys that my son hangs out with. We recently had a sleepover for his birthday, and they all brought their computers and handheld digital
to the sleepover.
Things, to the sleepover. And at one point, I have this horrible picture of them sitting in a row with their computers and their DSs, their handheld video game devices. And I was absolutely horrified by that. And at some point, I said to them, okay, you know, that's it. We're putting these away. You guys can play Risk. You can play air hockey. And they did, and they had so much fun. But they need to really be forced because they won't do it themselves because they are so used to it.
Yeah, and because it's a norm for them.
It's the
this
norm.
Is the
yeah.
acceptable
That's the
norm.
Social, it is actually the social thing for them, the conversation. There was one kid who was over our house once, and he said, I heard him showing my son how to play Minecraft, and he said to him, now you'll know what this other friend and I are talking about every day. I mean, my son was literally left out of the social conversation.
I feel that I got lucky in the fact that, you know, as I was growing up, my parents made me play outside. And they said, you're going to go outside until it's dinner time, and you're going to come in, you're going to eat a great meal, right. And then you're going to go back outside if it's still light outside.
My friend Nate's parents would make him and his brothers play outside for 2 hours, and then they could have 30 minutes of screen time.
Right. You know, we got a Nintendo, and we were allowed to do that on the weekends or when we, you know, if we just really were begging. My parents would say, no, you know, you need to go play. There's a park at the end of the street. We go run around. And I think that's a really good thing to keep encouraging.
I think absolutely the limits. I mean, and I am pretty strict with my son with the limits, but I'm fighting against this tide because he has friends who can play for 5-6 hours a night. And so that's why we end up fighting about it. But I think it's important to take this stand. And even though we live in the heart of the mission and don't live in a place where he can just run out with his friends, I do make him do active things and I do make him unplug. And I can see them when I say to him, like, you're not going to have any digital devices, I see him come up with imaginative things that he absolutely can't do when he's focused on even the prospect of having digital devices.
So the kids need us to set those boundaries for them
absolutely.
Because they're not going to do it themselves. Well, thank you so much for joining us in this conversation that I imagine is going to be an increasing conversation over the next couple of years. Ben Hanna is the camp coordinator for Camp Grounded, which is a program of digital detox. Tanya Shevitz is national communications manager for Reboot, which is a Jewish nonprofit that sponsors the National Day of Unplugging. And we'll put a link to all of that information at yourcallradio.org. And you can still post information there and continue this discussion. Again, that's yourcallradio.org. I want to thank everybody who called and for all of your emails. I apologize that we couldn't get to everything. But again, you can continue this conversation at yourcallradio.org. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. If you want to make a just and sustainable economy, where do you start? On the next Your Call, we'll talk with Gar Alperovitz, author of What Then Must We Do? Straight talk about the next American revolution. Alperovitz says the usual prescriptions for making change, political mobilization and labor organizing, are not working. So we should shift our focus to democratizing the ownership of wealth from the bottom up. So what does that mean? It's Your Call with Matt Martin and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco, with special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz.